Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
Mental health in the Black community is so stigmatized. People are more afraid of being labeled crazy than actually living with a mental illness. Like, it's so ironic that people will read every single self-help book there is instead of just going to therapy. Mental health is real, people, and we all have problems. So why not be the best version of you? And if that includes therapy, what's the worst that could happen? We need to look at mental health issues and how they look in minorities. Because they don't really look the same in everyone in general. But contrary to popular belief, it presents differently across racial lines. So that strong Black woman that is super irritable and always popping off on everybody is probably dealing with anxiety and depression. And she doesn't even know that that's what's going on. Your homeboy who wants to get drunk and smoke two blunts every day is probably an addict, even if he says that he can stop whenever he wants. Nobody wants to turn up every single day. That's not a thing. They're probably hiding all kinds of pain that they're in, and you just don't even recognize it. You just see them as the party friend. I'm here to talk about all of that. What is a mental health issue? What does it look like, and how do we treat it? Hey, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. Today, I have a special guest here with us today. It's Dr. Aisha Dickerson. I'm going to let her introduce herself and kind of tell you about what she does. How are you doing today, Dr. Dickerson?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am well.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Since you want me to tell people about myself, I am a professor at Argosy University and a few other schools, and I am a licensed professional counselor, national certified counselor, and counseling supervisor in the Atlanta area, and sometimes in the Alabama area. So I spend a lot of time in the field working with people who have substance abuse issues and co-occurring disorders, as well as youth and those who have child protective services cases. I did that for a long time and decided to go into academia, and that's what I do full-time now. Academia and supervision, but by doing supervision, I still kind of keep in touch with the clientele that I love so much. My favorite are prostitutes on drugs. Those are my favorite.
Yes, I remember. So what you guys don't know is that Dr. Dickerson was my professor, and that was literally probably one of the first things she said in class was that she loves prostitutes on drugs. That's her favorite population. And of course, you know, at the time I'm in school, I'm like, okay, it's an interesting thing to start the class with, but okay, we can do that.
They have the best backstories.
Do they?
Yes. I mean, most people don't just kind of grow up and at two or three say, you know what, I'm going to be a hoe when I, you know, when I'm of age. But a lot of things happen to them in their background. They learn from their parents. There's some trauma, maybe physical abuse, sexual abuse, issues where they had to run away. And prostitution is one of the oldest professions in the world. It still makes money. Now, women may not have anything else, but they'll have something to sell, whether or not they have legs or arms. There's a preference for each. Some people like them big. Some people like them with no teeth. Everybody can make money somewhere.
This is true. This is very, very true. So, Dr. Dickerson, let's kind of talk a little bit about functional alcoholics or just addicts in general, because a lot of times people think that they have this stereotypical idea of what an addict looks like. So the person who is stumbling or visibly high or visibly drunk, you know, their personal and professional life is being completely destroyed by drugs and or alcohol. And so that's the stereotypical addict that we think about. But no one wants to talk about the person who still has a job and still goes to work every day or goes to school. So what exactly does that look like, or how common is that, and are they treatable?
I think that there's a difference between what we as clinicians would consider a functional alcoholic versus what the lay person would call a functional alcoholic. Just because you drink a lot more alcohol than I do doesn't mean that you're a functional alcoholic.
True.
It may mean that you've built up your tolerance and everyone else is just judging the amount that you drink.
True.
The more weight you gain, the more alcohol you're going to need to get a buzz. someone who is in the clinical sense of a functional alcoholic is the person who goes to work and does their job and takes care of their children, not just functional alcoholic, functional addict. And then let's say after they get the children to sleep, then they get high or then they drink.
Okay.
But they're doing it. And that's the reason that is so much easier to make an excuse for, because you're thinking no one else is suffering. No one's suffering but me. Maybe I have a few health issues here and there, but because I'm a functional alcoholic, I also know when to go to the doctor and I can cut back when I want to. So someone who is a functional alcoholic or addict may also have periods of time where they're not using or they're not drinking,
sure,
but they'll always, especially during hard times, go back to that binge drinking or binge using.
So that's their coping mechanism.
Right, right. It's a coping mechanism. And we're using the term alcoholic loosely because, or I'll say, functional alcoholic or addict loosely, because the difference is that you're not letting it affect other areas of your life. People
okay.
who need rehab are not paying their bills.
True.
They're not taking care of their children. They're being neglected or abused. Someone who is quote unquote functional is making sure their bills are paid. Maybe they don't have a whole lot of savings, but
yeah,
the lights aren't getting cut off. Maybe they're gaining a lot of weight because of the calories from the alcohol,
yes,
but their liver's not messed up. So that is what a functional alcoholic looks like.
Are those people even treatable? Because I can imagine them just not even recognizing that it's a thing.
Yes, but the thing is that they're usually not needing to be treated for alcoholism or addiction. Because they're using the alcohol or the drugs as a coping mechanism, we as therapists would look at, what are you trying to cope with? You know, are you depressed? Do you have anxiety? Are you stressed out? Are you just having some issues with wellness? And we could find some other things that you can do. Maybe you can start trying to do yoga or Pilates, okay, or sip some tea. If you're drinking every night because you have problems sleeping, have you tried melatonin?
Yes.
If you're
it's natural.
If you're right. You know, if you're drinking because you're stressed out, have you thought about taking some things off of your plate?
Mm-hmm.
So because it's a coping mechanism, we're not treating the alcoholism or the addiction. We're treating the root issue,
because
things haven't yet gotten so bad that you're going through that downward spiral fully.
Okay. So is a functional alcoholic, so pretty sure I know a couple of functional alcoholics. So would that be, for lack of a better term, the gateway to full-blown or stereotypical addiction? Is that what that is?
You know, people, there's not one thing, in my opinion, there's not one thing that can be a gateway to full-blown alcoholism or addiction or drug addiction or any addiction. Drinking Coca-Cola can be a gateway to overeating and obesity,
okay,
because
yeah,
it has a lot of empty calories. Drinking alcohol can be a gateway to being an alcoholic. Drinking alcohol can be a gateway to being an opiate addict. Taking Tylenol PM or Z-Quil,
yeah,
to sleep can be a gateway to taking opiates to sleep, to taking heroin to be out of your mind and not knowing what's going on around you.
That snowball.
What are you trying to escape? First, you're using something that's helping you briefly. And the more that you don't address the root issue, the more you're going to need that substance or that activity, and then you'll need something different because it won't work as long as you're not addressing the root issue.
Okay. Yeah, I can absolutely see how that could be an issue. And I'm going to kind of step back into what you were just talking about as it relates to just anything, because you mentioned Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
We're in Georgia, so, you know, home of Coke. Home of Coke, you know, have a Coke. There's always, you know, this idea of having Coke. And even though there's this push now, you know, for eating clean and healthier living, you know, Coke is cheap. It's cheap. It's cheaper than water.
And I have to give it to Coca-Cola. They've done a lot of different things to Coke to make it appeal to more people.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the green can with the natural sweetener in it. And you have
Stevia,
Diet Coke.
Is that
Coke.
What's in it? I think something like that.
You got Diet Coke. You got Coke Zero.
Yeah.
You got the little bitty 100 calorie cans of Coke. But if you really want to overdo it, you're going to overdo it. If you really want to, I love strawberry cupcakes, but if I really want to overdo it, I can eat, you know, a whole 12. And if I have come to the point where I can't control myself, it will hurt. Mm-hmm. I'll feel my stomach stretching. I'll feel bloated, but it doesn't matter because these strawberry cupcakes taste so good to me. So people can be addicted to a number of things. And the thing is, a lot of people choose to ignore ways in which it's affecting their lives or blame other people. Let's go back to the cupcakes.
Okay.
I would want to keep, if I was going to be on a diet, let's say, I would keep strawberry cupcakes out of my house. However, I have two children. And I would say, well, it's not fair to deny my children sweets. So, you know, it's really if I didn't have these kids in the house, I wouldn't have to worry about this.
I can see that.
Let's look at people who have sex addiction, men in particular. You know, they were maybe, well, first let me say that sex is a really good stress reliever, especially for men.
It is.
So if you're not getting sex in your relationship, that's going to be an issue. So if a man is his wife or his girlfriend decides she's not having sex with him anymore and he's really addicted to sex and he goes and has sex with someone else, he's going to blame it on the woman. You know, it's her fault. She should have had sex with me. She knows that's important to me. My love language is physical touch. That's a lot of them say. That's my love language.
I've heard that. So, I mean,
it's her fault, but he's not paying attention to the fact that his focus on sex and not on the relationship has ruined his relationship. It may have ruined his relationship with his children. Mm-hmm. Him going out of the house to be with other women has taken him away from his kids. If he doesn't do that, if he decides that he's addicted to porn because he's going to masturbate, that's going to take him away from his wife. That's going to take him away from his kids because he feels yucky and he has to hide. Then maybe he's exposed his children to the pornography on the computer. So it's all those little things that end up adding up.
So basically, I remember you said earlier in the episode that, you know, anything can be an addiction, anything at all. And I know in the clinical world, you know, we don't really talk about it, you know, in my general life, but we have addictive personalities. So a lot of people just have, they're more susceptible to becoming addicted to things because they have that personality. So the a lot of alcoholics that I know personally, they don't drink anymore. So they've been sober for however much, but now they drink a lot of caffeine.
Right.
Or they...
Coffee is a good one. A lot of people get
addicted. They start smoking. So can you even change an addictive personality? Because a lot of times people substitute, you know, that quote unquote bad addiction in the case that we're thinking about alcohol and drugs with something else that may not necessarily be better, or we overdo something that is better. So you do have workout addicts who work out way too much and it actually hurts their body. So is there a way that we can even treat that, or how do we even deal with something like that?
Well, people have to learn to be creative, to adapt, and to try different things. Anything done in excess can hurt you. You know, you can actually die from drinking too much water. It'll mess up your electrolytes if you're just, you know, downing water, like you say, exercising too much. I know a lot of people who ran for stress relief or for health, and their knees mess up. They get knee surgery and keep on running, even though the doctor says, you know, get on the elliptical. And they say, well, it's healthy for me to run. You know, this should be okay. But it is an addiction. Like you're saying, that's an addictive personality. Someone who does not have an addictive personality will change up their routine, will change up what they're eating.
Okay.
Now, I'm not addicted to fried food. I can eat my chicken fried, baked, barbecue, you know, however I want to eat it. That's me being different and changing things up to be healthy. Did that answer your question?
It did.
Okay.
It did.
But
Thank you.
Coffee was a good example because a lot of people are addicted to coffee. And it's seen as acceptable. So, you know, you've got your home coffee, you got your Starbucks.
It is.
You could get different flavors, caramel, vanilla, apparently creme brulee. So I found
French vanilla is amazing. I will, you know, that is my thing. And now that, you know, you mentioned it, I talked about, you know, alcoholics having that problem, but I'm an insomniac. And so I don't I don't sleep well. And I'm diagnosed insomnia. It's not just me saying it. Like, I actually did a sleep study and everything. And so I'm afraid to take sleeping pills because I'm afraid that I'm going to become addicted to them.
To the sleeping pills.
But I easily drink 5, 6, 7, 8 cups of coffee a day.
And you probably need it because you're tired from not sleeping. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you're drinking the coffee and it's keeping you from sleeping. And it's a never ending
cycle. It is a terrible cycle. And I don't really know. I don't even know if I can fix that. You may just have to
stop drinking and allow things to extinguish like we would do with a child. If your child is not sleeping at night, you leave them in the bed for just a couple of nights. They'll cry themselves to sleep, but they'll sleep. When I worked in addictions, like you said, there was smoke. We had a lot of people who smoked cigarettes, but we also had clients who wanted to drink coffee all day. So one thing that we did was we provided coffee every day, and they thought that they were getting the coffee that they needed, but it was decaf. They didn't even know. And we didn't have to tell them it wasn't an experiment. We just had the coffee sitting out there, and they think, oh, I need my coffee, and it's decaf. So it's the placebo effect.
Yeah.
And at some point into the treatment, we would say, just FYI, that's decaf coffee you've been drinking.
And what is the placebo effect?
So the placebo effect is because you think you're taking what you need, your body and your brain adapts as if you're taking that. Like I'm taking a sugar pill instead of a pain pill. You think you're taking a pain pill so you don't feel the pain anymore. But there's no chemical that's actually in there. It's just your brain reacting to what it thinks it's supposed to do. Okay. We have people who, I've seen this a lot back in college, they would drink punch that they thought had alcohol in it and start acting like they were drunk and there was no alcohol in it. It's the placebo effect. You're doing and acting like you think you should be acting.
Okay. So is there any empirical evidence or data as to why there's no real treatment for opioid users or anything like that?
Well, there is real treatment. Just some things work for people and some things don't. As for empirical evidence, Kiwasha, I don't know these things right off the top of my head. I wish I was that smart. But you can find the actual evidence on the SAMHSA website. That's the Substance Abuse and Mental Health. They have all the empirical evidence that you need on. It's categorized by drug use, the type of drug, the ethnicity, gender, and all that.
Everyone, I'm going to link to that website, so that you can look it up and see how it's affecting our communities. But opioid isn't really something that affects as much right now, as far as I'm aware, minorities as much as other
things. Well, it does.
Okay.
So every year, the number of overdoses for opioid addiction continues to rise. And that's why now our police officers are, they get to ride around with Narcan. The residential facilities get to have them also. So basically, if someone overdoses, you can, Narcan is like an EpiPen for opiate overdoses.
I was just about to ask you that. I mean, like, I knew what it was,
so
people listening might not.
So it keeps them from dying, you know, keeps them alive, and then they go to the emergency room. They're in Alabama. I don't know what they're doing here in Georgia, but in Alabama, if your child has had previous overdoses and they're diagnosed with opiate addiction, the family member can also get the pen.
Mm.
And that's just to keep people from dying. It's not fixing the addiction problem, but it's saying, you know, you can't save someone. You can't save someone who's already dead. So it's like, at least keep them alive until we figure out how to help these people. Now, with that being said, those pens aren't cheap. You ever bought an EpiPen?
Yes, I actually have a nut allergy. They're extremely expensive, even with insurance. With my insurance, and I have very, very, I'm fortunate I have very good insurance. Mm-hmm. Even with my insurance, the EpiPen costs about $100 with my after insurance.
Same with mine.
And I need it.
I have a child who has a peanut allergy.
Yep.
And praise God, we've never had to use the pen, but every year it expires and they have to pay another $100 for another EpiPen.
Yeah.
So that's also expensive. Opiate abuse is affecting everyone. So it's definitely crossing racial lines, age and everything. It's just that it's more in the media because it's not poor people and it's not just black people or other minority groups who are suffering from it. Because we have well-meaning white people in the upper middle class who are suffering. It's an epidemic now.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean that other people aren't suffering, but please believe that institutional racism still exists and that it's been a problem. It's actually, opiate abuse is not a new problem. It's just a new problem to the media because of the celebrities and the pretty people who have lost their lives from drug use. Okay. And they don't look like the normal addict. Their lips aren't ashy. They still have their teeth in their mouth.
True.
Their hair hadn't fallen out. So, yeah, it can be your stay-at-home wife and your executive.
Okay. And one another question for me that I've gotten from other people is, can you kind of give a really quick rundown? And I know it's going to be a lot. But if you can do a really quick rundown of the different types of drugs. So a lot of times we hear in the news, you know, methamphetamine, or we hear opioids, or we hear the different technical names for these different drugs, but people don't actually know what category a Molly falls in. They don't know what category. they don't. So they know, it's just like, oh, I know what it is, but, you know, they're like, oh, I don't do that. It's like, well, don't you take this? So that's what this is. So people don't really know what it is. So can you do like a really quick, so give what it is and then the name of
one.
No more than five. So what is the amphetamine?
Okay, so let's start with amphetamine versus methamphetamine.
Okay.
We have what most people think of. I just want to say, let's not go into amphetamine because it's not used as much as methamphetamine, which is what people are cooking up themselves, which is the reason that why we have to show our ID to get decongestants.
Yeah.
We're almost about to have to show our ID to get washing detergent because people are doing things
with
that now, too.
Oh, my gosh.
It's got a very complex and dangerous chemical process to cook all of that together and make it hard rock.
Okay.
And just being in the presence of where the methamphetamine is being cooked can kill you. So most people who make it in like a lab have on the full body suits and the hazmats and stuff. But then you got Bubba in the trailer back there, you know, and his children are suffering. And someone who is using methamphetamine will be extremely hypersexual and will have sex with anything, including their children, including animals.
Really?
And so those are the things we look out for. And now someone who is going to detox from meth, we want to first send them to the hospital and make sure that they're not, that there's nothing on them that's going to cause issues for the other people in treatment because of the environment that they've been in.
Okay.
So I remember sometimes working in Child Protective Services, we would know that a child needed to be taken and we would head out that way and the police would stop us and say, we already know they make meth out there. It's dangerous. You probably better go ahead and turn around. We're not going out there and you probably shouldn't go out there either.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, we have cocaine, which we think of powder cocaine. That's the thing. People use it to have fun. But it's a lot more expensive than crack cocaine, where you break the powder down with baking soda or other elements and cook it up in a way that it is hard and more harmful. The cheaper it is, the more harmful it's going to
be. Okay.
Same with opiates. So moving on to the third one, opiates.
So is cocaine in the same family of drugs as methamphetamine, or is it its own category?
I would consider it its own category.
Okay. And where is heroin part of coke?
No.
Okay. So different. I'm going to let you handle this. I apologize, everyone.
Okay.
I'm trying to jump ahead of the expert. I'm just going to be quiet now.
Okay.
Continue.
Cocaine is not an opiate. So
okay.
So heroin is an opiate, but when people use, most people can get opiates legally from, you know, I think whenever you've had wisdom teeth removed, any kind of pain, you get oxycodone, oxycontin, not Percocet yet.
Oh, not Percocet?
Well, yeah, Percocet.
I was like, Percocet. I remember when I had my wisdom teeth removed, I had Percocet.
So you have your opiates. If you're using them long term, like let's say people who have arthritis, the longer you use them, the more you're going to need them. People who have chronic back pain, the more you use them, the more you're going to need them. And then if you don't have insurance, and your doctor won't give you prescriptions anymore, or you can no longer afford the prescription, then we can move on to heroin. So heroin is an opiate.
Oh, okay.
One thing that you can compare heroin to is Dilaudid. So heroin and Dilaudid is a synthetic form of heroin. And I used to always tell my students, you know, I remember having had Dilaudid when I had a surgery. And I remember the feeling. It was like a cold rush into my body, and then all of a sudden I was relaxed and I was happy. And so I can imagine someone wanting to feel that way, you know, all the time.
I've had that experience after surgery, not with Dilaudid. It was, I can't remember what. Oh, when I pulled the Percocet, I hallucinated. I had a vivid hallucination of me on a unicorn sliding down the rainbow. I vividly remember.
I completely
remember. I was like, I get why people get addicted to this thing, because it feels amazing.
It does. It does. And I'm willing to admit that. So heroin gives you the same feeling, but heroin is going to be a lot cheaper.
So those all the main cat? Okay.
Mm-mm, let's go into benzos.
Oh, yes. Benzos.
So benzo is short for benzodiazepine. And these are usually what people use as anxiety medications.
Okay.
And also medications that are given to people for ADHD. So anything that makes you hyper, the benzodiazepine is supposed to slow you down. So that would be Xanax. That would be Ritalin.
Adderall.
Yes, Adderall.
It's a common one.
So that's what
people
use it. And as a matter of fact, a lot of teens will go and read up on ADHD and then go to their doctor and act like they have the symptoms so they can get the medication and sell it.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
It's also one of those that are abused by a lot of mothers and housewives. I remember there's this show on ABC called Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
And one of the mothers was abusing her kids' ADHD medication because it gave her the energy that she needed. On one hand, it could slow people down, but on the other hand, it could speed up people who are tired. It could speed them up.
I'm tired right now.
Try some B12. So B12 can give you a little more energy too, or some sleep. You're tired because you're drinking too much coffee.
Yeah, I was like, it's not. I was just telling. I literally had 2 cups of coffee. I had a Red Bull. This is my third cup, and my body's still tired. My body's just like, just let me sleep.
Well, it's hard on your heart. And one thing that your body will fight you for is air and sleep.
Those
those are two things. Your body will eventually knock you out.
It will.
Just like if you decide to hold your breath, your body would just knock you out. It's like, we're going to breathe. It's going to do the same thing. No, we're going to sleep.
How does addiction normally start from what you've noticed? Normally,
that's an interesting question. It can start different ways. So there's a genetic component to addiction. Most people who are addicted to some substance have people in their background who have been addicted to something. Even if they could say, well, my granddad was an alcoholic. I always say, do you have anyone in your family who is an addict or alcoholic? And they'll maybe say, no, not that I can remember. I always just say, was your granddad an alcoholic? Oh, yeah, my granddad was. Yeah, my granddad drank a lot. But, you know, it was for a lot of grandfathers who were alcoholics, it was more permissible or not seen as bad in that day, because people think alcohol, you know, is legal, so it's okay to drink. And if you get drunk and you're at home, it's okay. So it's not as bad as, you know, using drugs. But there's that genetic component, and then there's the social component of, did you see your granddad drinking? Or, you know, when granddad drank, did he touch you inappropriately? Or did your mom pass out? Or was your mom addicted to drugs and then she sold you for drugs? So that's where a lot of trauma comes in. Okay. A lot of the people, you know, I said at the beginning of the show that I like women who are addicted to drugs and who are prostitutes, because a lot of their stories start with some type of sexual trauma. And they're judged so harshly because of what they do with their bodies and sometimes how they're not taking care of their children. But I had a client one time who she was sexually abused by her stepfather. And she told her father, and her father came to confront the man. The man then shot her father. And so she witnessed that happen. And then her mother blamed her for the stepfather being dead, so she put her out of the house. And so it's like I looked at her story and thought, well, it's amazing that you're not in a straitjacket. If all that happened to me, I might smoke a little crack too. So
I mean,
you know, if that's what you need to do to get by, I'm not going to judge you. At 14, how else was she going to make money?
Yeah, at 14, that's...
So she started turning a few tricks. And that's what she did until at some point she had her own child. And her child was taken from her. And that's when we go into that motivational interviewing. Well, what do you want to do? I want to get my child back. And eventually she did. But she had to get past not just other people judging her, but her judging herself.
Yeah.
Now, look what I've exposed my child to. He was born addicted to drugs. And none of my family members want to deal with me because of my past, you know, especially not my mother. And then when she tried to rebuild the relationship with her mother, you know, that was traumatic in itself because mom still kind of had some issues with how everything went down. So, yeah.
Yeah, that I definitely have seen with some clients and just hearing the stories of how people get addicted to different things. There's usually, a lot of times from what I've seen, a lot of people, no one goes out and decides to be addicted. It's like, no, it's just like, you know what?
Some people do, just not most of them.
Yeah, I was just like, I you're right. Some people probably do, but for the most part, the ones that I've seen, I'm fortunate, I guess. Fortunate, unfortunate, I don't know. I've never met anyone who's just like, yeah, you know, I decided I wanted to be an alcoholic today. This is what I'm going to do. So I'm going to drink until I become one.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about it is people think if you use drugs, you're an addict or, you know, you're going to become addicted. And that's just not true.
It's not for everyone. And that I think that for a lot of people is where the problem comes in. A lot of people think that won't happen to me. Mm-hmm. I think that's how for many addicts, when they're dealing with their issue, it's one, you're talking about the pain aspect, but for you have others who started their addiction from recreation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, I'm not going to be addicted.
Right.
I'm different.
Just doing this to have fun.
This is exactly. This is just fun. I just need a, you know, I just, Molly's are big now. So it's just like, mm-hmm. I just need a pop. I'm just trying to have fun. You know, it's not that serious. It's not that big of a deal. I'm not going to get addicted. Look at them. They're different. You know, that's happened to them because they're not strong enough or whatever right. the situation may be. And then, you know, 3 months of partying down the road, it's just like, oh, I need this. I need this to go to work, not just to party. I need this to, you know, to make it through Atlanta traffic. I need this. So you have that whole aspect. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people have. So you have the people who have trauma who, you know, like you said, they're going through so much and no one really wants to understand and no one wants to acknowledge that, okay, this person has been through a lot. And if you did too, you might have ended up smoking or drinking or doing something to mask that pain. But then you have the others who just like, not me. Mm-hmm. I'm different. I'm special. It's just like, nah, you know, I'm the exception. It's like, nope, you're probably the rule.
Well, see, the thing about it is that I know quite a few successful people who I saw doing drugs all through college. You know, snort a little coke here, go to class. You know, pop a Xanax.
Yeah.
It helps.
Adderall was smoke big a little, when I was in college.
Smoke a little weed. It helps me calm down and take my test. And those people are fine today.
Yeah.
The thing is, what if you're not that person? Unfortunately, you don't know until you try. Are you willing to risk it? Are you willing to risk trying and flipping that switch that starts your addiction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely. When I was in college, we call them dorm room dealers. Mm-hmm. You had the dorm room dealer when you like hurt for a lot of athletes. I used to tutor athletes. I went to a football school. I'm not going to put them out there to get them in trouble, but I went to a football school and, you know, we had a really good track team as well. And we had a lot sports oriented college. And sometimes when they were, you know, they pulled a muscle, they hurt something, they couldn't go, you know, whatever doctor it was that was training them wouldn't give them some pain med. They would find something that they could rub that would, you know, go into the system and take the pain away. It's like, that's not Bengay. I feel like there's something else in that cream that you're rubbing on yourself. Or they would drink something or they would smoke something. So, and you just had them in the dorms. You would just go there, you'd ask them, you pay your money, and you just kind of keep it moving. And that, I think, happens in a lot of colleges
nowadays. It's a great way to pay your way through school.
It is.
I knew someone at a big university who dealt drugs and just so happened to be around the fraternities and sororities, and everybody came. And he never had to work a real job through college. He paid his whole way through
college. Absolutely.
Very successful man today.
Very true. There's a show, Grown-ish.
Still in sales.
There's a show called Grown-ish. I don't know if a lot of people have been watching it, but I actually love that show. It has Yara on there, and one of the cast members on there, he plays the dorm room jock. That's literally what he does. He sells
his notebook.
And he doesn't smoke anything. He doesn't drink anything. He doesn't use any of his product, but he gives it to everybody.
Right.
So, yeah, that's definitely true. So like I said earlier in the podcast that Dr. Dickerson, so in class, one of the first things that we did, and we didn't do it first, but she mentioned that we were going to do it, was we were going to analyze trap music. So we were literally in class analyzing rap lyrics that reference drugs and Molly and the different types. And we had to figure out, you know, what was Scissor? What was Molly? What was all these different things? And we had to figure out what this was so that we could recognize it because that was the code name on the streets. Mm-hmm. And so trying to figure that out. And she mentioned the romanticizing, you know, of to a degree of drugs in our society today. And I'm going to let her speak to that a little bit more because she's definitely better at it than me.
Well, the thing about it is in this particular area, in Atlanta and surrounding areas, trap music is big. Well, trap music is big everywhere, but trap music was founded in the South.
Yes.
The majority of our famous trap rappers are in the Atlanta area. We have Future, we have the Migos, and they were in Gwinnett County. They grew out.
Yes, they grew up
in Lawrenceville. But yeah, you've got Jeezy, you've got 2 Chainz, and
T.I.
You know, he raps about things that are a lot more positive in politics.
Now.
But right back in the day,
the mixtapes, the original,
right. Back when I knew T.I., when we used to hang out back before he was on the radio, he was just a little drug dealer, a little skinny man with a big old head, but a hat barely fit on. So a lot of people listen to the beats. You know, they say, I don't know what, my kids especially. I'm just listening to the beat. I don't know what they're saying. And, you know, the radio bleeps it out. But then you got people like me who really enjoy listening to music that has absolutely no has nothing to do with my daily life.
That's your escape.
It is. The beats are great. And Southern and trap music is known for the beat drop. It starts out slow and then their beat drops and they just start going. But these rappers are rapping about things that have happened in their real lives or that's currently happening in their lives. Some of them still deal drugs.
Yeah.
They still have some little people that are dealing under them. And most of these big time rappers don't live in the neighborhoods that they ruin.
They don't.
But if you listen to the lyrics of the songs, you learn a lot. I don't think that you should be able to work in addictions in the Atlanta area and not at least listen to rap music. I don't care if you like Taylor Swift and pop music and country. You need to listen so that you can know. First off, unless you know what's popular, what popular drugs
That's
are
true.
Out right now.
True.
A lot of people didn't know what Molly was until they started listening to it on rap music. People don't realize what 2 Chainz is talking about when he talks about the fork. And, you know, you had that man who was in love with the cocoa. What was his name? Everybody loved that.
Everyone did love that song.
O.T. Genesis.
They loved that song and they didn't realize it until they saw the video.
Right.
A lot of minorities kind of knew what it was, mm-hmm. right? A lot of, you know, minorities, at least my friends, knew what he was talking about. And then he came out with the video and it was so blatant in the video. I was like, he is really chopping
up. Actually bacon soda and it looked like he had, you know, his real bottom bead there. You know, she had on the wife beater.
She did.
The crack of her bottom was hanging out and she didn't have a waist trainer on. She was looking real comfortable. But she was in there helping, you know, they were weighing stuff. They had the guns and they weren't in some big, beautiful mansion.
No.
They were in what looks like the projects.
A trap house.
Linoleum floors and, you know, the white, sycamore mm-hmm. white walls. And he was just in love with the cocoa.
Yes, he was.
And so I think in each class we have a few people who are familiar with trap music. And then we have maybe some older students.
I remember that. We had a couple of those.
And they are just amazed. Like, oh, my God. So they're breaking it up with the fork. Yes. So, you know, this last semester, we were playing that Migos song. And they were saying, wrist twisting like a stir fry.
Yeah.
And they're like, what is wrist? I was like, just the same way that you would scramble eggs. And like, oh, okay. That's because you have to cook the cocaine. And everybody's just, oh. And Dr. Dickerson, how do you know so much about making drugs? Well, You just don't know. You know, I've had to save quite a few from the trap house. And I also let them know, you know, the trap house might be in your neighborhood, mm-hmm. and you don't know it. A lot of people are dealing out of their grandma's house, and she's okay with it because, you know, his grandson is paying the bills. Or a lot of people are dealing out of what used to be their grandma's house. You know, she passed it down so people would have somewhere to live, and they're dealing out of the houses. Because people don't deal out of their own houses because you hate for somebody to come through and kill your family trying to get your money and get your drugs. But there's a lot that you can learn from trap music and from the videos, not just about drugs, but about the lifestyle that some of your clients may be living. Trap music talks about prostitution. Mm-hmm. It's very degrading to women, but guess what? The things that are happening in trap houses, this is what you're hearing on the music. There's a lot of prostitution. There's, you know, multiple people doing whatever they turning a lot of tricks to get a hit. So, I mean, it's real life. And the beats are good.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The beats are good. So I do want to thank you for coming. I know we have to kind of wrap it up at this point in time. You know, all of you, I'm going to let you know that we're going to have her back. We have to have her back at some point.
Yay.
So send your questions and your comments and your concerns and your thoughts about other things as it relates to addiction, because she is definitely the expert in that, that you want to hear about. Is there anything, Dr. Dickinson, that you want to kind of close the show out with?
Let's see. I would say that if you are interested in addictions, if you're thinking about volunteering in a center that works with addictions or going back to school for it, go ahead and listen to the whole Future Migos and OT Genesis CD first. And listen to it intentionally. Decide if that's really what you want to deal with. Because when you're listening to something that's not the clean version and it makes you uncomfortable, being in this field will make you uncomfortable.
All
right. So that's it.
There you go, everyone. There you go. That's a good closing. I'm just going to let her have that. Once again, thank you so much, Dr. Dickinson, for gracing us with your presence and your knowledge. It is greatly appreciated. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you join in for the next one. All opinions shared on this podcast are solely that of the participants and do not reflect the views of any governing mental health professional board. The host of this podcast has received written consent to share any and all stories that have been presented.